Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in East Detroit, Michigan, and began working in his dad's business at age 11. After his dad died in 1982, he took over the family beer distributor business at age 26. And in 1996, he helped fund and lead the successful statewide referendum on casino gaming in Detroit. Today, he owns and runs businesses in gaming, retail, development, lodging, and wine. His name, Tom Chalani, and we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Tom Chalani, who, along with his longtime friend, Joe Vaccari, have reopened Freedom Hill Amphitheater. Tom, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thanks, Jack. I'm happy to be here.
Can we start by talking about your mom and your dad?
Sure. Born in East Detroit back in 1955, and mom was a German immigrant, and my dad 100% Italian. They both grew up in the neighborhood around the airport, city airport, and they met when I think my dad was on furlough from World War II. He had come home for a little while, maybe after basic training. And, a lot of people got married pretty quick back then. And then he made it through the war and got home. And they settled in East Detroit with my two older sisters.
What's your earliest remembrances of working with your dad in the beer business at age 11?
Well, just stepping back a little bit, my dad, when he came out of World War II, actually started driving a beer truck for Anheuser-Busch. So a lot of people know me for the Miller guy in town. But from the mid-50s through 1964, my dad was with Anheuser-Busch and became frustrated and worked for Sears. So my dad actually worked for the Sears store that opened on 75 and 14 Mile, Macomb Mall. When they opened, he was there. It's the only time in my life I actually knew when my dad was coming and going, because in the beer business, the hours are 7 days a week. And he got a break. Ham's Beer wanted to come to Michigan in 1966, and nobody would take the inner city of Detroit, which he knew very well. And he borrowed a few beer trucks and got started in 66. And that's really when I started going to work for my dad full-time in the summer. And it was a great experience. What I really remember those days, too, is in 67, the riots started, and our warehouse was on 12th Street in Avery, not too far from here. And we survived that. We had great neighbors, and obviously the police department didn't want all that alcohol coming out of that warehouse. And it was a real education for me on back in the 70s or 60s.
Your dad then later got the Miller distributorship. How did that happen?
He actually was looking at another Ham's distributorship in Garden City, Michigan, that had Western Wayne County. And the large beer they were selling was Ham's, and there was another little beer that they had called Miller. And he purchased the distributorship, and a year later, Philip Morris made the first purchase of Miller Brewing Company. And as the saying goes, they took it out of the champagne bucket and put it in the workers' bucket, and Miller was off and running. So Miller became number one in a short period of time. And in 1974, Miller Lite's introduced, which becomes number one beer in a lot of places in this country, and including Michigan. So we had two huge products in the state of Michigan.
1982, your dad passes.
Just a little step back. So my mom passes when I'm 20. I'm up at Central Michigan playing baseball, and my dad calls me and says, "You got to come home." And I come back home, and I never left after one semester up at Central Michigan. And I got to spend, a lot of time with my mom before she passed when I was 20. And at that point, I was right back into the beer business. I wasn't going back to school. I was going to be with my dad. And lucky I did, because who would have figured at 58 years old that he was going to pass? And he was in Vegas at the Super Bowl when he had the heart attack. And he decided to come home. He came home on, I don't remember what airline at the time, they've come and gone. But He was a board member at St. Mary's Hospital in Livonia. And I took him right off the airplane. I took him right to the hospital, and he was there for a couple of weeks, and then moved him to U of M, and it just wasn't good, and he passed. So it was at 26, you're never prepared for that, and you're probably never prepared for your parents leaving at any time.
So 2 weeks after your dad passes, you're summoned to Miller Brewing headquarters in Atlanta, and you meet with the president, Leonard Goldstein. Tell us about that.
You know, Leonard was a very good friend of my dad's, street guy. Leonard and I are still friends today. He's 85 years old. He still lives in Wisconsin, where Miller is headquartered, and he teaches a business class at the University of Wisconsin. So we stay in touch. Lucky I had him. He became my mentor, and he actually protected me for about 12 months. Miller at the time would have loved to have broken that dealership up and sold it off. And as a favor to my dad and to me, he said, I'm going to put you on probation for 12 months, and I'm going to be your best friend. And you can call me every day with any question you have, and we'll work our way through this. I owe it to your father. And that's how I got through it.
And the rest is history.
Well, you know what? One of the things that Leonard talked to me about, he says, listen, you don't have a formal education. He says, you know, a lot of guys in this business are street guys. In your dad's ear, the new people coming through are, you know, highly educated. He goes, you're the street guy. He says, you got all the senses your dad had. He goes, you need to surround yourself with very talented people, and you will grow. Never be intimidated that you've got to hire somebody that is smarter than you in different areas of your company. And he says, and that's with anything you do in life. And if you listen to me on that, you will grow.
We're talking to Tom Chalani. When we come back, we'll ask him how he ever got involved trying to get casinos in Michigan. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Tom Chalani, who was instrumental in getting casinos into Michigan. Tom, how did that ever happen?
Well, it goes back actually 25 years ago to this year. I started Native American gaming in Rapid City, South Dakota. So just a little history there. I was looking at getting involved in the business in Vegas and realized it was a little bit tougher than we thought, getting into the good old boys network back in the 80s. And my partner, Roland Gettner, had a buddy from Vietnam he was in with, and said, you got to come to Rapid City, South Dakota. There's a new startup company called Sodak that hasn't sold a slot machine yet, but they have the agreement for IGT slot machines for Deadwood, South Dakota, which was a little town that was legalized to have some slot machines. I went over to there, looked at the company. Two of the partners wanted out. We bought them for $2. And I capitalized the company. So Roland and I each had a third, and there was another gentleman named Mike Werdeman. And we're selling a few slot machines in Deadwood, and all of a sudden the governor calls and says, or announces he's signed the first compact for legalized gaming for Native Americans in this country in South Dakota. And Vegas and New Jersey didn't want the Native Americans to expand and legalize gaming because they had a monopoly between New Jersey and Vegas. And they turned to us and said, listen, you guys, we don't want to sweep it under the rug, but you guys need to take care of this. So we went in, and I funded the first Native American casino in South Dakota and realized that we weren't going to get any bank financing because they're a sovereign nation, and the banks did not know how to perfect a loan on this land. So after two or three casinos, we were pretty much tapped out. The casinos were doing great. And a little company out of Memphis, Tennessee comes knocking on my door, the Promise Company. These guys were old Holiday Inn guys, and they just had bought Harrah's in Lake Tahoe and now are expanding in the gaming business. And they were the only company that came to me and said, we believe the Native American are going to spread across the country, and we want to buy half your company, and we want to take it public. And that's what we did. It was the best business deal I've ever done because of their clout with Wall Street and our knowledge of Native Americans and where we were going with this, we became a great partnership.
25 years later, this is a quote from you, owning and managing a casino is like having a bank in the middle of a circus.
Well, so true. You know, the bank, obviously, it's a serious situation. We have a lot of money going through the casino, a lot of cash. And you have to have all those controls in place to make sure that they make it to the right spots. You know, the circus is obviously the part that I enjoy the most is with the customers. You know, it's a festive time. People that enjoy casino gaming are there to enjoy the time that they're there, from people watching to the food experience to entertainment. And that's the part that I enjoy the most is being with the customers out on the floor.
God has blessed you, Tom, blessed us all in many ways. And he's given you some tremendous angels or mentors. Mr. Goldstein won, and a while ago you got to spend a couple hours with Ellen Mullally in his office, in the glass house. What did you learn from Ellen Mullally?
Well, interesting story. Him and I have a passion of wine, and I met him at Oakland Hills Country Club. He had just got done playing golf with some people. And he was having some wine, and somebody must have said, you know, that's Tom Chilani. He has a vineyard. And I came over to the table, and I brought a bottle over, and we started drinking it. And he enjoyed the wine and had to leave. But he said, listen, my executive assistant's going to call you, and I want you to come over and spend some time with me at my office. And I'm thinking to myself, sure, I'm going to get a phone call, right? A week later, I get a phone call that here's a few dates that Alan's open. He'd like you to come over for an hour or so. And I said, I'll be there. So I went up to his office, and I was amazed because it was just one-on-one time with one of the most important CEOs in the world. And he showed me his office and talked about the history of the office and showed me, you know, why it was positioned in that corner so they could look at the Rouge plant and other things. But then he went through some of the old artifacts in the office that meant something to the company. And then he took me down to a room that where he holds his Thursday night meetings. So everybody that management in the country, in the world at that given time has to be online. And he can talk to everybody for a few hours and they go through all their issues, what's going on and opportunities around the world. So it was amazing couple hours to understand from Ford Motor Company to Boeing how he's brought that strategy over from Boeing and how he runs Ford. And, you know, there's different CEOs. I'm a Chrysler dealer. And I've been around Sergio a little bit, and Sergio's more a lot like me, a little hard charging. And Alan, the side that I saw, he's the coach that puts his arm around you, and you just want to go in and fight. So two different styles totally, and they get the same results. But he is really one nice man and a nurturing individual.
He's very, very big on putting customers first. Mr. Goldstein said, that's what you learned from your dad. That's how your dad was successful. Talk to us about building an empire by putting customers first.
You know, that it's an interesting thing, and I always look at it as my money, my purchasing dollars that I have. So whether I'm going to buy a refrigerator or whatever in my life, the customer always comes first. And I try to explain it to my employees. I learned a valuable lesson in Vegas, the guys from Mandalay Bay, when they opened up beautiful brand new casino, and they were our partners here at Motor City in the beginning. And after a couple years, it wasn't as clean when you came through. The VIP service wasn't as good. And I was telling Mike Ensign was the chairman of Mandalay Bay. I said, listen, you're losing it through the front of the door. He goes, you got to be kidding me. I said, no. He goes, I haven't walked through the front of this place since the day we opened it, and none of his executives did. So they had lost touch with what the customer was seeing through the front door. And in all my businesses, I don't let any of my management team walk through the front door. And one of the things that I do in the casino gaming business is I like to stand in line, in the buffet line. Nobody knows who I am, and I listen to their conversations, and I might even ask them, you know, how long is this line going to take? Have you ever been here before? I want to hear from the people, the customer, how they feel about my businesses, and I usually don't let them know who I am, or if there is a problem, I usually do and take care of it. But it's all about perception and how I look at any of my businesses. It's all about our dollars are all the same, you know, as far as how we're going to spend them. And people want to feel that you want the business, and you got to earn it. And that's the way I look at all the different companies.
Another angel in this town for 50, 60 years has been the legendary Brother Rice football coach, El Fracassa. Talk about the time you had lunch at Baco's with Fracassa.
Well, You know what? It was an interesting lunch. I had just made the decision. My boys, I have three children, and I made the decision that my oldest, Vince, was going to move over from Country Day to Brother Rice. So Al wanted to meet with me and a couple other executives and the president. And we're sitting at Baco, and I had only met Al for a brief time when I beat him in bocce ball at the Palazzo, and he was still upset about that because he's so competitive. And Al at the time was building a new football field and was putting new turf, and they were a little short. So the conversation started talking about, you know, Tom, could you please help us out a little bit and, you know, make a little donation? And anybody that knows Al knows there's no little when Al asks for a donation. And I'm sitting there, and I said, well, okay, that's fine. And I'm tapping the president, Mr. Bernie, under the table, who I don't know really. And I said, well, if you want this number for the football field, I said, I need something for my son, Vince. And he said, what's that? And I said, well, I want him to start next year at quarterback, and I want him to be captain of the team as a freshman. He started choking. And he said, well, I've never seen the tape on Vince. How good is he? I said, well, he's a center. I said, but I always wanted him to be a quarterback. Do you think he could work with them? And we become very good friends since that lunch. And you know, one thing about Al, and I watch it over at Brother Rice, is that when any boy walks in for the last, that's played for Al over since the 70s, he knows their name, and he'll remember a play or something that happened with that boy. And that is a treasure that I'm not looking for the day when Al decides to step down, because he is Brother Rice, and he's meant so much to the nurturing and growing up of so many boys over there. It's not all about football. He'll tell you know, he's got 50, 60 boys on that football team, and he's got his starters, but every one of those boys that were behind those starters meant something to him and that team, and he made them feel just like a starter.
We're talking to Tom Chalani. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and with Tom Chalani, a man of many titles and many business cards. Tom, running a business today is very tough. It's a war out there. Yet alone running multiple business, and you are running and overseeing many, many different businesses. How do you do it?
Well, it goes back to the comment earlier about Leonard Goldstein. I mean, you need to hire very talented people that are dedicated to whatever business you slot them into. And that's been, I think, our key to our success, and we continue to grow in Michigan and outside Michigan. I think with where interest rates are today and what we see the economy doing, we're in a growth mode, and we're going to continue to strategically look at different places that we can make a difference.
Even though you have these many diverse companies, gaming, retail, Harley-Davidson dealerships, car dealerships, etc., what's common about all of them?
You know, I think common is, you know, we're not a manufacturer. So we're in the retail business. We see thousands of people a day between the automobile, bike, and casinos. And it's all about delivering an experience when they come through the door. And actually, before they come through the door, you know, I'm really big on how our facilities look. From a bottle of wine in the label to the front of the casino or the dealership, people have to look like it's inviting, it's friendly. They want me to come in and give them a chance. And that's how I look at my businesses. So we look at them on the outside of the building, and once we get them in, we want to entertain them.
Tell us about Motor City Harley-Davidson, the largest such dealership in the Midwest.
You know, Harley's an icon that has broken so many barriers for me. And I didn't realize it when I bought it. I think we've owned Motor City 16 years now. That it's one of the top three or four icons in the world, like Pepsi, Coke, Philip Morris. When you see that Harley-Davidson label, whether you're in China, Russia, or the United States, it means American-made product. It means it's a culture, it's a lifestyle. And it's so many people that come into the dealership that either owned bikes maybe in college or in high school, and they haven't had a bike, and now two buddies walk in, they're in their 40s or 50s, and said, you know what, our kids are growing up, we've got time to do this again, and we're going to travel the country this summer or our week vacation, and we're going to go on these bikes. We see that all the time. We see a lot more ladies today come in. More ladies want to ride. They don't want to be on the back of their husband's bike. They're independent. So we're seeing a lot more younger people with the styling of our bikes now at Harley-Davidson. Harley-Davidson has over 75% market share in the United States.
This past couple of weeks, the Pope at his weekly general audience outside, there were hundreds of Harley-Davidson motorcyclist, and he went over to greet with them. I don't think you could sell him a bike, but maybe you could give him a bike.
Well, it's a Catholic church, and me being Catholic, they'll take any, and I shouldn't say that, but they'd probably take a bike or two from us. But, you know, that is true, and I read that, and I was very excited. There is a tradition in this country, and maybe it's worldwide, of the blessing of the bikes, and we do it every spring. In Michigan, up north they have it, a few of the other churches around, but people will come from all over to be blessed. Obviously, we all want to be safe on our bikes, and it is a little dangerous at times when with cell phones and people not paying attention in their cars. But there is a blessing in the bikes, and we are excited that the Pope is engaged with Harley-Davidson now.
Another angel mentor in your life for decades has been Joe Vaccari. And late last year, the two of you decide to reopen Freedom Hill. You've put $2 million in renovations. Tell us about Freedom Hill.
You know, Joe's an interesting guy, and I've known Joe almost 30 years now. I knew his wife, Rosalie, actually knew before that, going back to Central Michigan and Billy Toko, who I was playing third base with up there, which was Rosalie's brother. You know, Joe's a little older than me. So we didn't cross paths at Central Michigan. But I tell you, he's one of the greatest guys in the city. He's a big teddy bear. He's got a big heart. If anybody knows, he's probably involved in 90% of the charity things that go on in this town, whether it's through the Andiamo restaurants or now at Freedom Hill, as we're starting to use Freedom Hill that way also.
40 plus years ago, you worked with your grandfather, Vincenzo, in his basement on the east side making wine. What did that teach you?
Well, interesting. You know, my grandfather and grandmother came over from Italy, from Ellis Island to the coal mines of Pennsylvania and Uniontown, Pennsylvania. And then when Ford was hiring back in the 30s, my grandfather moved up here, and that's how the family got started. And my grandfather retired from Ford. So there's a long legacy with Ford Motor Company in the family. But what I did learn is he truly was a farmer. His passion was farming. He taught me grafting before I even knew what grafting meant. Now in the wine business, we do grafting all the time. And his passion for food. But we used to go down to Eastern Market and load up the car with as many grapes as we could get in it. And he'd make 2 to 3 barrels of wine every year. And I got the privilege of doing that with him. You know, my dad was more the hard liquor beer guy. My passion for wine that I have today comes from my grandfather and from his traditions of Italy.
How did you and your wife, Vicky, ever get a winery in Napa, California? I mean, that's Tom Seaver, Mario Andretti. I mean, it's a who's who of America.
Well, I probably wouldn't have got it, but I just went out and bought it and didn't ask. And I came home and I told my wife, we have 3 young teenagers. This is in 05. I said, honey, I bought a vineyard in Napa, something for us to get our hands dirty with. And she goes, you did what? A little valley there for a little while. But Vicky and I are very engaged in this, and it's our passion. We love doing it. There's something in common with everybody in this world, and it's food and wine. And we've met so many nice people around this country with wine dinners from coast to coast. I wouldn't change it. And I see myself as things, as I get later in life, that my passion's going to grow more because I enjoy being out there in that weather. I enjoy watching from the blossom to the barrel of what it means to me. When I saw my name on that bottle of wine, that I was involved in every part of it, it really set home, and it set home for Vicky too, that we're really changing things. We don't make a lot of wine, but we make quality wine that people enjoy, whether it's a wedding, an anniversary. People remember what wine they had. They might even remember what vintage, but they do remember it was something special in their life, and they bring our wine up in those conversations a lot.
When you go out there and you're driving past all of these famous wineries, do you ever look up to the skies and talk to your grandfather or your dad? And if so, what do you say to them?
You know, and it's probably more how I feel about my own children, is the roots that we give them. And I go back and think about my grandfather. And hey, when I was young, and I had a baseball glove, that every time I wanted to be in the garden, no, I wanted to be on a baseball field. But he would grab me by the ear, and it was, you were in the garden. And the things that I've learned from him and I'm using today, that's what makes me smile, and I'm sure he's smiling too, because you can't change how we grew up in life.
We're talking to Tom Chalani, and I'm Jack Krasula. And this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Tom Chalani. He and his wife, Vicky, own the winery in Napa, California, and in 2011, they were named the Charitable Couple of the Year in Michigan. Tell us, Tom, about the Chalani Family Vineyard.
Well, the vineyard is 20 acres on Big Ranch Road right in Napa. It's just gorgeous. It reminds me of being in Italy, from where my grandfather's from. There's a mountain range behind us. The Napa River is the back of our property. It's a whole tree line. But what I bought it was a beautiful Tuscan villa that is Italian architecture. And the vineyard actually rolls. So in a lot of vineyards, you actually just see the front of them because they're flat. Ours happens to roll, so you can see all 20 acres. We have 120 olive trees. I brought my grandfather's fig trees that I've had in our family there, and they've just flourished in Napa. So it's a paradise that is something you need to see.
How do you explain the magic of wine?
You know, wine brings people together. The magic is the people that, you know, and I've collected wine for 30 years. I've had some great friends in the wine business. Sid Ross here in Detroit has exposed me to a lot of different wines over the years. Eddie Jonah, another great guy that taught me wine, Italian wines for sure, and pairings of wine with food, which is so important. But, you know, when I drink European wines, they have that beautiful terroir, that taste that you get from the earth, and they have some of that must smell that comes in that's been there for thousands of years of Europe. When you drink Napa Valley, you're drinking fruit. It's about the flavors of the grape, the smells of the grape, and that's what people expect from Napa wines. The interesting thing about wine is I drink wine from all over the world, and it's depending on what Vicky might be cooking or my mood of what I want, but that's what's great about wine. When I was in the beer business, you're loyal to a beer. When you're in the wine business, people's tastes change daily, and they move around, and so we're just looking to be in that rotation of their taste buds every once in a while.
You are definitely, amongst a lot of other things, a wine ambassador. And one of your cabs is called Adore. Why Adore, and how do you go about deciding on a name for the wine?
Very hard to decide on a name, and when you do decide on a name, to get it registered that somebody might haven't used it somewhere else in the world, or maybe just tied it up and they're thinking about using it in the future. Adore means passion, love. And Vicky has named all of our wines. She's very good at it. She does all the research. But she has to have meaning behind them. And our love of wine and food is how Adore first got named. We also have another wine called Tenacious that she found and named. And she says she named it after me for my tenacity on how I go about things. But she's a very good marketing, and she does a lot of this research and work herself.
Tenacious is a Merlot blend. If you want to learn more, www.chalaniwines.com. You say, Tom, that with young wines, be aggressive. With old wines, be gentle. That's true of people, too, I guess. Yeah. Talk about young wines be aggressive, old wines be gentle.
Right. So, you know, when we talk about decantering, a lot of our wine dinners, Wiki and I talk to people, I don't care if it's a $5 bottle of wine or a $500 bottle of wine. If it's young, it needs to get air to it and open up. It just releases some of those tannins and flavors and aromas that air bring when you bring the air into the wine happen. So we've even designed a decanter, and I'm on the board at Center of Creative Studies College in Detroit. And we have one of the young students design a decanter that actually is kind of like flower petals. So when you rotate the wine, most decanters would be smooth on the inside. This one is very rough, and it just juices the wine up and it lays down. And I give, if I had to leave you with one good thing today about wine and decantering, I tell people, oh, and I don't care if you don't have a decanter, if you have a water pitcher, I don't care if it's a plastic pitcher, decanter. But open your wine, if you're having a barbecue on Sunday and you have young wine, open it Saturday night and not just take the cork out of it. You've got to pour it out of that bottle because just opening, taking the cork out doesn't give enough surface. And let it sit overnight and you'll taste a wine that's so different the next day. Some of the problems we have in the world today is when we go to restaurants, we order a great bottle of wine and they decanter it. You know, we're in a fast pace. We're going to eat there for an hour or so. That wine really never comes around properly. You never got a chance to enjoy what that wine was really about. So if anything, I leave you with today, decanter young wines and be aggressive. On old wines, you got to be gentle. And you never know how long an old wine's going to last. So if you're drinking something that could be 30, 40 years old, it might taste good to you in the first 5 minutes. And after 10 minutes, it starts to lose its flavor. So make sure that you've got enough people around to enjoy it.
In 1982, your dad founded Hearts of Livonia. Still going strong today. Tell us about Hearts of Livonia.
One of my dad's good friends had a heart attack in Livonia, Nick Canzano. And when he went to St. Mary's Hospital, they realized that they did not have very good equipment. And Nick survived it, and they decided they're going to put a golf outing on. And Ed McNamara was our mayor at the time, got behind it. And that started back actually in the late 70s. And we've raised over $2.5 million, with most of it going to St. Mary's Hospital for different things, from heart to the cancer center. And I'm still a part of St. Mary's, not on their board. I'm on the foundation board of Beaumont Hospital. But I love going back to St. Mary's because of the nuns are still there, and I enjoy being around them.
1 year at the tourney, you meet someone, and your life has never been the same since.
So back in 1982, it was the year my dad passed away. We're doing the golf outing in August. And there was this young, very attractive 20-year-old redhead named Vicki Williams that caught my eye, and she wouldn't give me time of day. I was too old. I was 26. And finally, by the end of the night, I had her borrow my jacket because it got chilly out, and she tried to give it back to me. I wouldn't accept it. And I said, I'll go to the restaurant that you work at, and I'll get it later. And from that point forward, we've been together since 82, and this is our 25th wedding anniversary this year in October.
29 years later, the two of you are the Charity Couple of the Year in Michigan. One of the many charities you're involved with is Care House in Oakland County. Can you talk about Care House?
Well, Vicki's a longtime board member at Care House, and yeah, she supports me on the charities that I get engaged in. I support her, and Care House is very dear to her heart. You know, a lot of children come through there that need support, help, counseling, and maybe even a place to stay. And I can only say the many times I've been there that it's heartbreaking to see that a young child, that's not being treated properly. And there's a place for it. I wish there wasn't, but there is. You know, we just built a new care house a few years ago. In fact, Governor Snyder came out and cut the ribbon with Vicki. Vicki and I were a big part of launching it, well, many others that support Care House in Oakland County and all over the state. And I'd love to have you come out, Jack, and see what they do over there.
If you go to Mount Pleasant, CMU, you see the Chelani Hall. You only went there one semester. And by your own admission, you went there and you played baseball. Why the love for CMU?
You know, they've always stayed in touch with me, from the coaches that knew the story. You know, Joe Vaccari played football up there, so he had a relationship, so I stayed involved with him. My wife went there for 4 years, so Vicki was there up there. So, and our received my honorary doctorate, which was very important to me because it's hard to, in today's world, when you're looking at your children, that you're talking about education, and very important that you go off to college and finish your college career, that I didn't get that opportunity. And I didn't want them to know that I wasn't engaged with Central Michigan, that I felt that, you know, I did miss something by not being able to stay up there. And I was actually able to give the spring commencement speech. And the speech was basically, I centered them at my children and talked about how I felt about education, how important it is, and looked at my kids and said that you need to leave a legacy. And my legacy, I wanted to be a help other children at Central Michigan. And I put my mom and dad's name on that dorm up there. And I can't believe, and it's amazing how many people call me and say, you know, that's really nice that you did that for Central Michigan. And they could be from anywhere in this state where their child's going there. And the next thing is, how do I get my kid in there?
I've been blessed to come to your house a couple times and the famous wine cellar in the basement. Tell us about that, if you would.
You know, we live in an old home. It's almost 100 years old in Turtle Lake. And I got to build my dream wine cellar that I've always wanted, where I could dig it out underground and put the wine behind glass so we could have dinners in the middle of the wine, but yet not let the temperature change of the wine. And there's a great smoking and cigar end down there with a fireplace for the guys. There's a kitchen down there so the chef can be very close to the table. And we've done a lot of charity events. There's probably been over 50 charity events that have been done in that wine cellar for everybody in town that we love to do. And there's a lot of famous chefs that have come around the country to do things in there.
As our time winds down tonight, Tom Cialini, what advice would you give to our young listeners?
You know, for the kids in college or kids coming out of college like mine are right now, follow your passion. You know, you're young. You're going to be able to learn a lot. And follow the passion by getting your foot in the door. If there's a company that you want to work for, put aside that, you know, you need to make $7,500 or $100,000 to pay all these loans that you have from college. An owner of a company or your manager will see you're passionate and you love what you do, and the cream rises to the top. Just get your foot in the door to where your passion lies.
You live passion every day, and all of us are the beneficiaries of that passion. Keep up the great work.
Thanks, Jack.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible.
Believe in yourself.